Eikigan Roku, Case 2. Master Joshu said, "The Supreme Way has no difficulty. It just rejects discrimination. As soon as there are words spoken, this is discrimination. This is clarity. I do not remain within clarity. Do you preserve anything?" Then a monk asked, "Since you do not remain within clarity, what do you preserve?" Joshu said, "I don't know either." The monk said, "You don't know. Since you don't know, why do you say you are not in clarity?" Joshu said, "You posed the question. Now you can go." That's the case with this familiar quote, "The Supreme Way, the ultimate path." Now, Master Joshu lived from 778 to 897 Common Era. So, when he brings up this quote, "Supreme Way," it's approximately 200 plus years after Sengtan. Sengtan, who is the author to whom it's attributed, the third ancestor in the Chan tradition, died 606 is the year we usually attribute to his death. So 606 Common Era, and Joshu lived from 778 to 897. And since this was when he was teaching, so it would be from the age of 80 to 120. So sometime during that period, the Supreme Way. Joshu, let me say a few words about Master Joshu. Master Joshu, many of us are familiar with him because we visited the monastery and temple where he lived when we were in China. We visited the monastery and temple where he lived, most of which was reconstructed after the Cultural Revolution because it all had been destroyed by that period by the actions of the Red God. But there's a tiny remnant that's still from the original temple when Joshu lived there, and there's a stupa connected to Master Joshu. A stupa is a pagoda-like structure, tower-like structure, if we think of it in that way, in which relics or remains from the master are stored, sometimes additional objects, and around which various religious activities are engaged in practices. We circumambulated it. That means we walked around it in a clockwise version, walked around it, chanted, or people do other activities there. It's a very large temple now, but in Joshu's day, it was a small temple. It's said that there were hundreds of temples in that town, and there are still, it said, 60 temples there. But as I said, most of them were destroyed during the Cultural Revolution, and many of them have been reconstructed. But what's interesting for this case in the Blue Cliff record is that Joshu is quoting from the same Shinjin Mai, or Tsinsin Mei, the text that I quoted from yesterday, the trust in mind, quoting the first phrase, the supreme way. Sometimes it's translated, the ultimate path is not difficulty, is without difficulty. Just avoid picking and choosing. Just avoid picking and choosing. Picking and choosing. So what do we mean by this? I spoke a little about this yesterday. But notice that Joshu is using it as well. He's using it to instruct his assembly. As soon as these words are spoken, this is picking and choosing. As soon as these words are spoken, this is picking and choosing. This is picking and choosing. Then his statement, this old monk does not abide within clarity. Do you still preserve anything or not? Do you still preserve anything or not? Now notice clarity he's setting off. He's taking a step further. A step further from the supreme way, the ultimate path. Because we ordinarily might think the ultimate path, if we can get to some place past picking and choosing, that's where we need to get to. Joshu is telling us, no, this old monk, referring to himself, does not abide within clarity. Do you still preserve anything or not? Do you still preserve anything or not? In a way, this is a test for his monks, whoever's listening to him. Do you still preserve anything or not? Do you attach, hold on to clarity? Hold on to, I'm going to get to the supreme way. I am going to get to the supreme way. And he says, even there, this old monk does not preserve anything. This old monk does not abide anywhere. In a way, he's what's called putting down a hook. That's how commentaries say. He's putting down a hook for his monks. Putting down a hook. This is a traditional device. Is there anything you, are you preserving clarity? So, in a way, the monk who stands up takes the bait. Since you do not remain within clarity, what do you preserve? He's, in a way, trying to outsmart Joshu, but in a way getting trapped by words, clarity, preserving. Since you do not remain within clarity, what is there worthwhile for you to preserve? Better yet, since you do not remain within clarity, what is the nature of that state? How can you show it to us? Joshu says, I don't know either. Joshu is very generous towards this one. Very generous. I don't know either. The monk goes further. Since you don't know, teacher, why do you nevertheless say you do not abide within clarity? Joshu's response, enough to ask about the matter. Bow and withdraw. Bow and withdraw. We have all sorts of ideas that we can get trapped by. I've got to get to the supreme way, the ultimate point. So if I avoid picking and choosing, then I'll get there. But you, teacher, you're saying you're not there. You don't abide in clarity. So what have you attained? How can you show me, say to me, what you attained? And Joshu is so generous and says, I don't know either. But Joshu is being soft and at the same time scolding towards the monk. You're so smart asking such a wise question. But really, there's a very sharp cutting. Enough of you. Bow and retire. This I don't know of Joshu is truly revealing. Joshu's known as a master of the Zen of lips and tongues. Very gentle words and yet very sharp. Or very direct. Sometimes sharp where that's needed, as in this case. You could say scolding towards the monk. Because the monk is really sort of, should I say, half-baked. Oh, I know about clarity. I know about what our practice is. It's to get to this place. So there's this thing called clarity. And I know about that. And you're saying you don't abide there? What do you preserve? Is there anything left? this, I don't know, sense is the most fundamental point, and yet it's also the most difficult point for us. We always want to have something that we can hang ourselves on. And when I say hang ourselves on, I mean hang ourselves in other ways too. Hang ourselves, even if it's fancy words. So quoting words, what Joshu is doing is using the words which at that time most of those who have were in his assembly would have known. As I said, it's 200 plus years. Joshu, had a very, what should I say, fairly well-documented life. From the age of his late teens, when he began studying with his teacher, Nanchuan, he studied for 2 or 3 years and then had what's considered a great awakening, and then continued with his teacher till the age of 57. So he was his teacher's attendant for about 40 years until his teacher Nanchuan, or Nansen as he's known in Japanese, died. Then he spent what's the 3 traditional years of mourning, caring for his teacher's tomb, being at the temple, and then spent 20 years from the age of 60 till the age of 80 wandering on pilgrimage throughout China, visiting many of the great Zen masters of the time. We have lots of documentations of dialogues and encounters between him and masters such as Rinzai and others, Wang Po and others in his time. And then at the age of 80, he settled down at the small temple, which is from which he gets his name, which called, the town at that time was called Joshu. I can't pronounce the Chinese way of pronouncing it. Joshu is the Japanese way of pronouncing the name. The Chinese way is Chaozhou, but that's off because I can't do the tonal. So I'll go with just using the word Joshu. When Joshu went on his pilgrimage, one of the things he said was, if I meet even a 7-year-old girl who can teach me the Dharma, I will study with her. If I meet even a 100-year-old man who can learn from me, I will give him instruction. In a way, that's a very important point. Now, at that point, Joshu was a well-accomplished master. Nevertheless, he was open to learning from all. We have many encounters of Joshu with people on the road of all sorts, and some of you have read some. He also had lots of encounters with women on the road, and that are documented, and that we have a dialogue. And some of you have heard some of those. So that's Joshu, whose mouth and lip, or lips and tongue Zen, is famous. And his words of all sorts, that, such as response, have a cup of tea, or wash your bowls out, or does a dog have Buddha nature? Most of you are familiar when he says, woo, or no, but he's also well known for saying yes, woo. So, this is Joshu. So what's Joshu doing here, and why is this of any significance? Why is this of any significance, bringing up this case? What does the supreme way, the ultimate way, has no difficulty, just rejects the discrimination? Just rejects picking and choosing. How do we manifest that? How do we understand that? I talked too much about it yesterday, and now I'll add some more.
Could you speak up a little bit?
You can't hear me? Okay.
That's better.
Maybe.
No, I can hear you.
You can hear me? Okay. I do tend, I'm sorry to say, sometimes I start a sentence a little louder and then I drop off a little. And that's a habit of my mouth I have to attend to. The supreme way, or really what we're talking about is the truth of our life. We're not talking about some way outside anywhere else. But the way to live the truth of our life. Now, it's not about setting up this new criteria. I can't pick and choose. I can. So what is it? What does it mean, rejecting, not picking and choosing, rejecting discrimination, is way some people translate it. Discrimination, clarity. We all pick and choose. We wake up in the morning and we get out of bed. We wash our face. We pick, use some soap. Are we picking and choosing? Are we not picking and choosing? What is not picking and choosing? See, Joshu is showing us directly. He's not just giving us some words as a ideal, some sort of thing like oneness, equality. That becomes what's often known as Buji Zen. Buji Zen means no matter Zen. There's nothing to do. No, from morning to night, there's all sorts of wonderful ways to turn the wheel of the universe called our life, called the Dharma, to manifest, and I'll say improve, the perfection that we are. So what does it mean, this not difficult, avoiding picking and choosing? Actually, I would say this great difficulty avoiding picking and choosing, but only difficult because of the strength of our habit and clinging to the habit of picking and choosing, of believing our discriminations, or believing our stories about our discriminations. Stories about delusion and enlightenment. Stories about what should and shouldn't. And it's not a matter of words. Whether we use words like right or wrong, it's what we do with these concepts and conceptualization. How, what is it, I don't know? What is this being not knowing? As the, if we use the expression, the one straight supreme way, the path. Joshu answers the monk, more than answers it, shows it to him right there, where directly manifests, I don't know, even before he says it, as he says it. We get trapped with, and I point out, it's not we here, but more than 1,000 years ago, this monk who is coming up to Joshu was trapped by what he thought he knew and how much he understood clarity and not clarity, picking and choosing and not picking and choosing. He had concepts, and as soon as Joshu spoke, he grabbed his concepts in what Joshu was saying. There's a comment on this case by Hakuin about the monk, where he says, greedily gazing at the moon in the sky, he loses the pearl in the palm of his hand. Greedily gazing at the moon in the sky, in his head, in his way of understanding it, instead of seeing what's right here in front of him. Oh, if you don't abide in clarity, then is there nothing to preserve? What are you preserving? How can you say, I don't know? Instead of seeing Joshu's I don't know, he's caught up in the word. He's gazing at the moon in the sky of his idea of what our practice is about, what this idea of the supreme way is towards some great clarity, to something somewhere else. Always, it's right here. Our practice is exactly here where we are. You're not going anywhere else. You're embracing this moment that is, if I use the expression, the supreme way. Whatever word you like to use, supreme, ultimate, doesn't make a difference. Way. Those are just useful expressions. Pick them up, put them down. Joshua doesn't calculate and figure out what he's going to say. The monk brings something up, Joshu responds right there. Straight away he shows the supreme way has no difficulty. Why is it not difficult? Hakuin comments, each time it is brought up, it is new. Each time it is brought up, it is new, but not some it out there. But this moment of your life is brand new. Except if we try to grasp it through the filter of all sorts of stories. I don't mean anything magical, but just very simply, right as it arises. You, in all your capacities and abilities, exactly the supreme way, breathing in, breathing out, sitting down, standing up. And yet, and yet, the supreme way has no difficulties. There's a nice poem here. Well, actually, I want to go back to the capping phrases. I know some of you don't always find them easy to understand. So in the tradition of the Blue Cliff Record, Blue Cliff Record was originally the cases, the 100 cases, were put together by Schwedo, and approximately 100 or so years afterwards, Yuan Wu, or Engo, Master Engo, took them and added. Schwedo put together the case and then wrote his own appreciatory verse for the case. And Yuan Wu, or Engo, then added what's called capping phrases to each of the lines of the main case, and then wrote an extensive commentary on the case, and then again wrote capping phrases to the verses, and then his own extensive commentary on the case, on the verse. So, on the case, it says, Joshu, teaching the assembly, said, Yuanwu is also Engo in Japanese, said, what's the old fellow doing? Don't create complications. Truthfully, we create lots of complications. My opening my mouth here is more complications, but sometimes it has to be done. The ultimate path without difficulty. Common, the capping phrases, not hard, not easy. Isn't that nice? Because we think without difficulty means, oh, it's going to be easy. That's eventually the monk's problem too. The ultimate path without difficulty. Is without difficulty. It's way, it doesn't come to such categories of hard and easy, and we only poison ourselves with those. So even when we hear the words, we add those, go to those, just avoid picking and choosing. What's in front of your eyes? The third ancestor is still alive. Praising Joshu right here. Right here, Joshu. Right here, third ancestor. Right here, Buddha. Right here, the life that you are, this moment, nowhere else. Clearly express. Joshu continues, this old monk does not abide within clarity. Does not, oh, I skipped one. I'm sorry. As soon as there are words spoken, this is picking and choosing. This is clarity. The capping phrase. Two heads, three faces, a little boasting. When a fish swims through water, the water is muddy. When a bird flies by, feathers fall. Meaning, well, this is already making a little trouble. And yet, of course, making trouble is what Joshua's doing, because he's, in a sense, both encouraging and pushing his audience, the monks, whoever else was in the audience. Sometimes there were lay people who would come. We don't know exactly when this talk was given in the assembly, but we do know that all sorts of lay people visited Joshu, men, women, who would come to the talks. Creating mud because the fish swim in the water. There's currents created in the swimming, but has to be done. This old monk does not abide within clarity. The capping phrase, his thieving intent already shows. Where is this, the old fool going? Where's the old fool going? As Hakuin says, he puts down a book for everyone there. Do you still preserve anything or not? This is where he turns around. He presents his, this old monk does not abide within clarity. And then he asks his audience, all of you, do you still preserve anything or not? Do you preserve anything? Do you, let me see another good word as the translated. What's it? Yeah, do you preserve anything? That seems to be the best translation of that word. Do you hold on to anything? Do you attach to anything? At that time, a certain monk asked, since you don't abide within clarity, what are you preserving? This old monk is throwing Joshu's teeth. Brave and maybe foolhardy. Do you preserve anything? He knows something about clarity, he thinks. Yuan Wu's comment, the monk presses him well. His tongue is pressed against the roof of his mouth, meaning he's forced to, you know, really forced to do something, because he's, but is he being tongue-in-cheek to continue on that? Is the commentary, is Joshu really being, having his tongue pressed against the roof of his mouth? Or is this a tongue-in-cheek comment where it's not really saying it? But in a way, this gives Joshu a step further to both encourage those who are listening to him, clarify for them, and also take a next step with this, if I'll say, uppity monk who seems to think he's got it all together, he's smart. So Joshu said, I don't know either. The comment by Yuan Ru to that is, the monk crushed this old fellow dead. He had to fall back 3,000 miles. Though he says that, it's not at all so. In fact, it's just the opposite. But sometimes the appreciatory verses do that. The monk then goes, sort of falls for the trap. Since you don't know, teacher, why do you nevertheless say you do not abide within clarity? He climbs onto the hook when he had lots of other alternatives. So, Engo says, look, urging the monk on, or urging us on to see how foolish the monk is. Look, where is he going talking about Joshu and talking about the monk? He chased him up a tree. The monk thinks he really got Joshu then. You don't know, teacher. Why are you saying you don't abide within clarity? Not seeing the richness, the value, the direct clarity that no one can approach. I don't know. I don't know. No one knows. The Buddha doesn't know. So, Joshu says, it's enough to ask about the matter. Bow and withdraw. And Engels final comment about that. Lucky thing, he, Joshu, has this move, the old thief. The old thief has gotten exposed. In fact, it's a wonderful teaching opportunity and teaching device that the Joshu is using to really give this monk who is brave and foolish, or brave and self-conceited with his knowledge, the opportunity to be cut off, to be shown what he's doing, despite it sounding like, oh, you're so smart, such wise questions, but really, really much said or sarcastic. Okay, enough of you. Enough of you. So there's a verse that goes with this case. I'll read the verse, but I won't talk about it. I know indulge myself because I so like to visit with Joshu and these other masters, but sometimes it's not so easy. The supreme way has no difficulty. The words are straight. The speech is straight. See, it's not just some ancient phrase. It's for all of us. No difficulty. And of course, as soon as we hear, believe difficulties in our mind or elsewhere, we know we're ensnaring ourselves. See, the truth is there's no difficulty in your life, in our life, except that we believe it. And our difficulties are entangling in our likes and dislikes. Entangling in them, not having them. They just come and go, no problem. One has many kinds, the verse continues. Two has no duality. Notice, one has many kinds. I thought it's one, and yet many kinds. Two, no duality. How can it be two and no duality? Well, maybe we'll get to that. Two, if we take two in a conceptual way, then of course duality is a problem. At the horizon, the sun rises, the moon sets. Before the balustrade, the mountains deepen and the water chills. When consciousness ends in the skull, how can joy exist? The dragon howl in the withered tree has not evaporated. Difficult, difficult. Discrimination or clarity? You see for yourself. I will remind us that Joko particularly liked this expression about the dragon howl in the withered tree. Sometimes it's the dragon howls in the empty skull, but dragon howl in the withered tree. Okay, I've spoken a lot this afternoon. It's time to stop. Thank you all for being part of this. Hopefully, we all can appreciate these supreme way without difficulty. That is our life. Thank you.